said you come over here.
If you were president, what would be your strategy for ending the war in Iraq?
Allison Paul, what would it be?
Just come home. We just marched in. We just come home.
Hi, I'm Stephen Vincent. Thank you for joining me for this edition of The Freedom Message. So we have some breaking news for you right now. The Los Angeles, California organizer of the Obama campaign here in Southern California has endorsed Ron Paul for president. This just hit my inbox a few minutes ago, and this person organized the meetup for Ron Paul in Los Angeles, which apparently exceeded 2,500 people, a very substantial organization of Obama supporters. He has now endorsed Ron Paul on the ObamaLA.com website. We have this. My name is Mark Whittemore. I started the original grassroots Obama LA and carried it until it was 2,500 people strong. Having done substantially more homework now, I am inclined to switch my vote. Make no mistake about it, I think Obama would make an awesome president, far better than any other stale part of the problem Democrat running. However, in case you have not noticed, America is picking up quote-unquote flush momentum and is going down the tubes fast. We no longer have time for rehearsals or inexperience. We must get it right and get it right this time. We don't even have the luxury of voting along party lines if we are to get it right. And so, even more surprising is that for the first time in my 32 years of voting, I will be voting for a Republican president. And that Republican is Ron Paul. Listen, people, and take the time to listen closely to Ron Paul, because, like the last, we can ill afford one more drastic idiot mistake in the White House. Lives depend on making the right choice. Indeed, our entire nation depends on the right choice this time. Sincerely, Mark Whittemore, Los Angeles, California. So I will be contacting Mr. Whittemore. I do have his number, and I've left him a message, and I will be seeking to get him on the show for an interview for tomorrow's show. He's here in Los Angeles, as I am. So breaking news, a major Barack Obama supporter has defected to the Ron Paul camp, and I'm hoping that he's going to be willing to not only support Ron Paul verbally, but also hoping that he will organize for Ron Paul as well, since we can certainly use that kind of help. The number to call into the show and participate is 888-228-4494, 888-228-4494. I'd love to get your call, talk to you about this late-breaking news. I want to comment on that quickly. I think that this is further indication of the paradigm shift that's taking place, something I discussed with Naomi Wolf, of course, a longtime Democrat, when she was on my show a few weeks ago. We're seeing the paradigm of left-right, Republican, Democrat, conservative, liberal start to break down, and I think the new paradigm that's emerging is constitutionalist versus statist. Those who believe in the power of the state above all else, and those who believe in the rule of law and constitutional Republican, Democratic, Republican government. I think those are the lines that are being redrawn right now, the real lines, the real battle lines in the body politic America today, 2007. So more on that later. We do have some media for you today. Ron Paul was interviewed by Neil Cavuto. I'm going to play this for you and then give some commentary on it later. In this piece, Cavuto is actually civil to Congressman Paul for the first time that I can remember. He's normally very hostile. So let's go ahead and listen to this, and I'll talk about it when we're done.
You know, at first, he was just an internet curiosity. Then he became an internet phenomenon. 14 bands then wrote songs about him. 14. Rich and not so rich. You know, at first, he was just an internet curiosity. Then he became an internet phenomenon. Now, apparently, his GQ, because he is among that hit publication's Men of the Year. Wonder how Republican presidential candidate Ron Paul feels about that? Let's ask him. He joins me right now on the phone. Congressman GQ. Man, how do you feel about that?
Well, I don't know what to make of all that. I guess it's all good news, so I'm pleased with it. So that just shows the momentum we have with our campaign, I assume.
You know, it's funny, Congress, when I saw that, you know, they heralded the fact that you're being a future leader and all, and how the difference of your campaign and the uniqueness of it. But I'm wondering, as you get more mainstream accolades, are you worried that the cult phenomena that you built disappears?
Well, I didn't worry about not having it. I don't know if I do have it, so I don't worry about losing it. So I'm not quite sure I see it in that terms. I've just been delivering a message steadily over many, many years, and I was always wondering if anybody would ever pay attention. But now that we have a lot of people joining us and a lot of money coming in, it is getting the attention of a lot of people, so I'm very pleased with that.
You know, Congressman, I've talked to a lot of people who follow your campaign, those who love you, those who don't flip over you, but even the ones who don't flip over you, Congressman, say, I know where he stands. I like where he stands. That's the kind of talk, sir, I've not heard since Ronald Reagan, who was very unequivocal, and some people said, take him or leave him, but, you know, people then said, I know where he stands. How important is that?
Well, in this day and age, evidently it's very important because I think people have lost confidence and trust in government, and I hear it all the time. You know, they'll come up and they say, you know, I'm going to support you. I love what you're doing. But, you know, there are some things I don't agree with you on, but I know where you stand. So I think trust is a very important thing. But I heard this for years over in my own district. You know, they would say, you know, we know where you stand. You tell us and you do what we say. So trust is an important factor, and I think people sort of starve for it.
There's a subtle shift going on in the race, Congressman, where they used to kind of dismiss you. I'm talking about the other candidates, even snicker at you. And now they're lodging bombs at you. So that means you've been elevated from this quaint candidate to this serious candidate. What do you make of that?
Well, I'm very pleased with that because I think we deserve the attention because we have an important message. We talk about the Constitution, living government, freedom, sound money, and balanced budget. And sometimes there for a while, for a long time, they would say, well, this is extreme thinking. And
yeah.
I don't think it's too extreme. I think people who spend too much money and have, you know, these ideas that government should run our lives, that to me is extreme views. And evidently there's a lot of Americans are starting to agree
about
with
that. Sir, a little earlier we had on the head of the Conference of Mayors saying we've got to bail out, help out homeowners. It's the government's responsibility that those who got deep in this stuff need to be helped. What would a President Ron Paul do?
Well, we would lament the fact that government created it, but we'd also be discouraged to think that, you know, we can't bail somebody out. I mean, we recognize how these bubbles occur, whether it was the NASDAQ bubble or the housing bubble. This comes across by inflating the money supply and lowering interest rates below the market level, causing people to do things they shouldn't have done. So literally it was caused by the Federal Reserve plus housing programs of the government.
But you would let them rip, right? It's not the government's job to help.
There probably are times when you could help some people out, but we do not have moral or legal authority to go in there and renegotiate these contracts. If you or I sold a house to somebody and we were holding the note, and then all of a sudden the government came in and said, well, we're going to change it, you can't recall your property, and we're going to say you have to take less payment, you know, we would recognize it was a penalty. But when it's so impersonal now, people think, oh, all we have to do is renegotiate these contracts and bail out the consumer. I mean, it doesn't work that way. That's more
right. It is a slippery slope. You know, Congressman, a lot of conservatives love you, and then they hear your view on Iraq. They hear that we shouldn't be there. We shouldn't, furthermore, be spending any money with any country anywhere in the Middle East. And they say, you know what, he's an isolationist. And that behavior has dragged us into wars because we were isolationists. But what would prompt a President Ron Paul to attack another country?
Well, I would never attack another country if they haven't attacked us. 70% of the people now agree with me that we ought to come home. And therefore, it's a very, very popular position.
But is there any method, sir, to a preemptive strike against someone you know hates you and would probably want to do something to you?
No. I mean, there's...
So you only react when acted upon?
Or imminently so. But we've never had this in our whole history where somebody was under imminent attack, because the president actually has authority to respond without going to the Congress if you're under attack or there's an imminent attack.
So on World War II, Congressman, would you have intervened then?
Sure. I mean, we were attacked, and we went to the, you know, Roosevelt went to the Congress, and they had a proper declaration of war.
But that war included, as you know, Congressman, Germany then saying, we're at war with you too now, United States, because
yeah,
you're attacking Japan. So
they
escalated, right?
And they declared war against us. So
and you would react to that and declare war on them.
Sure. Right? If they declared war against us, this is different. They're going to attack us, you know. And actually, there was a lot of fighting and sinking of ships even before then.
Right.
So I'm as concerned about the process and the rule of law as I am about the issue, and they're both very important. But we go to war, and we've been going to war since World War II without declarations. We still have troops in Korea, and we lost in Vietnam, and this thing's going to go on for years and years and years. No Republican or Democrat is offering a program other than myself and bringing these troops home very soon and ending this war.
All right, Congressman, very good seeing you. Congratulations on the GQ thing. I never made it to GQ. I don't know how you did it. So congratulations.
Thanks a lot.
So there we have Ron Paul on with Neil Cavuto on Fox News. Of course, it's always interesting that we even have to comment that a reporter is friendly or, shall we say, open-minded with Dr. Paul. It would be really useful to take some clips of Neil Cavuto's prior interviews with Congressman Paul, say a month or 2 months ago, and play them next to the interview we just saw and see the radical change in the disposition of Cavuto, where he actually in this interview allows Congressman Paul to answer questions without constant interruption and aggressive interruption. I want to comment that I don't think we should be fooled. Neil Cavuto is and ever shall be an establishment media hack. Okay, what's happening here is they are now obligated. Now, he notes in his interview, he says that now you have been elevated to a serious candidate. So they are obligated by the actual support that Congressman Paul has from the American people and the fact that his freedom message is, in fact, striking a serious chord with the people of this country. Because of that, they are obligated to give him respect. They're obligated to give him time that they would not otherwise give him. So it's only through the work of the grassroots support that this is happening that we're able to watch Congressman Paul on with Neil Cavuto in this way. Let's not be fooled. Now, I'm going to show you a case where you could easily be fooled by these pundits. And we're going to see something a little bit later on with regards to Tucker Carlson. That's going to open your eyes to the point I'm trying to make here. These people are snakes. Do not be taken in. When they treat the people and the people's representatives and Ron Paul and the Ron Paul movement with any kind of respect or deference, it's only because they have been obligated to do so. We're going to check in on that a little bit later. You're going to see my point. I believe we have a caller on the line. Is there someone on the line that wanted to ask a question or a talk? Hello?
Oh, yes, hello. I'm here. It's Kathy.
Oh, hey there, Kathy. How's it going?
Hello?
Hi, I can hear you. Go ahead and say, what's your question?
Hello?
Hi, Kathy. Go ahead. What's your question?
Hello?
Okay.
Hello?
Don't know what the issue is there, but whenever we get Kathy sorted out, you just let me know, all right? So we're going to go on to the next clip. So we're going to talk to we're going to go ahead and look at Ron Paul on Bloomberg TV.
Intense grassroots following and a surprising amount of campaign cash. The Texas Congressman and Republican presidential hopeful joins us now. You have been a fundraising phenom. You've said you're going to raise $12 million in this quarter. With 5 weeks to go, are you there? Are you going to meet $12 million or can you top it?
Well, it looks like we're over nine already, and I think we have a little ways to go. And then there's another one of those special days that the grassroots has organized, you know, on the 16th of December, and they're claiming that we're going to do better than we did on November 5th. So who knows what this is going to lead to. It's, to me, astounding, but I'm very pleased, of course.
But you think you may well raise over $12 million then in this quarter?
Well, it looks like we can't stay under it. The momentum we're going, it looks like it's going to be a lot more.
Let me ask you about where you're going to spend it. New Hampshire, Iowa, have you figured that out yet?
Yes. Yes, we've already started spending generously in New Hampshire and in Iowa, and also in South Carolina, and we're working hard in Nevada. So we're going to hit those four early states right off, but I think we're going to have enough money in the be prepared to follow up right after that for February 5th.
Okay. You're a well-known opponent, Congressman, of the Iraq war. Ended American commitments around the world. As you look at the world today, is there any threat that you could see on the horizon to American interests that would mandate a military response?
Not very much. I think our greatest threat comes from our overextension and by our involvement in the places where against us. So I think we have this problem of terrorism that we have to deal with, but not a country. I mean, the terrorists don't even belong here. They're just hoodlums and convicts, so to speak. But we incite them with our foreign policy, so that is our greatest threat. But we spend more money on our military than everybody else put together. And what country is going to attack us? Nobody will mess with us because we're invincible militarily. It's just through diplomacy and our policies with other countries, putting on sanctions and trade policies. That's where I think we're really in deficit.
Let's turn to domestic issues. You're a constitutionalist, a man of limited government, but even if you were successful as president, do you think you could eliminate huge programs, entitlement programs like Social Security, Medicare?
No, and that's, you know, you won't find that on my website. I mean, I know philosophically we could do it in a better way. And a president, you know, being a strict constitutionalist, I recognize the president has limited authority. He has more authority over foreign policy and movement of troops, and that's what is so important right now. But if you're going to get rid of the IRS and all these programs, no, it has to be a consensus. But if I were to win, that means there is a consensus with the people, and that means the politicians in Washington, and there are a few of them, and they would come our way, and they would start eliminating it. But I have a better position for those who are concerned about Social Security than the rest, because I would save hundreds of billions of dollars overseas, and I'd take care of the people at home. I always argue that, you know, we're at a point now where we're taxed to bomb bridges in Iraq, we're taxed to rebuild bridges in Iraq, but we don't even have money for our bridges and our levees here at home. So in many ways, my transitional program is the only way we can provide for ourselves and take care of ourselves, balance the budget, and get some stability back to our dollar.
Another controversial issue is abortion. You're an obstetrician, and you've advocated sending it back to the states and saying it's up to the state legislature, but you're, you know, also a libertarian. If a state legislature votes to prohibit a woman from getting an abortion, isn't that just as much of an infringement on individual rights as if the United States Congress does it?
Well, I don't see it that way. As an obstetrician, you know, over the years, I had to protect that life, and if I messed up and hurt the unborn, I was sued. So it isn't a matter of women's rights. It's a matter of whether the unborn has rights. And to me, it was live. Human has legal rights. And that is the issue. The issue is life. It's not the issue of privacy or the woman's right over the fetal right. It is strictly an issue. What are we going to determine is the life minute before birth equivalent to a minute after birth? And I don't know how we can deny there's a great deal of difference. And our national approach, which was through Roe versus Wade, said we as obstetricians can commit an abortion in the third trimester. There's something to me awfully bizarre about that. But because it's a difficult issue, the more difficult an issue is, I think it should be held more locally. And that's in our institutions, our Constitution doesn't allow us to deal with this at the federal level. I think, you know, murder and manslaughter and all acts of violence are generally held and taken care of by the states. So there's no tradition for the federal government to be involved in this. And certainly there should be no federal government funding of abortion. And right now there's plenty.
Congressman, you've been involved in more than a half dozen debates with your Republican rivals. If you don't get the nomination, as you look at this field right now, can you support any of them in a general election?
It would be pretty difficult. I mean, I think if they changed their position and they said, their foreign policy was going to change, and if they started believing in the foreign policy of George Bush when he ran in 2000, remember, a humble foreign policy,
yeah.
No nation building, no policing in the world, sure, I might consider. But right now, that's not likely because they want to expand the war. That none of them wanted to take an option off the table in bombing Iran. How could I support something like that after having these positions which I've held for 30 years and all of a sudden getting a lot of support in this country to just back off and say, oh yeah, this was fun, but now I'm going to support somebody that wants to spread the war in Iran? There's no way I could do that.
In your view of Rudy Giuliani, who's the front runner in the polls right now?
Well, I think he fits the category of the rest. I mean, they come from a neoconservative political position. They think that we're supposed to spread our goodness through force, and they are big entitlement people, so I would put him in the same category as the rest.
As you go through this process, remember you ran once before, 20 years ago, as a libertarian candidate for president. If you don't get this nomination, would you reconsider and would you think about running again as a libertarian or third-party candidate in the general election?
Not really. I have no intention of doing that. That is not in my plans.
Ron Paul, thank you very much for joining us from Texas today. When we come back, another attempt at Mideast peace, a preview.
Okay, so there we had Ron Paul. Okay, so there we had Ron Paul on Bloomberg. Now, what stands out for me with that interview is a couple of things. First of all, Bloomberg Television is financial news. Excuse me, where were the questions about the economy, about the financial situation of the country, about the U.S. dollar, about gold? Don't quite see how you could have an interview on a financial news network and not with Ron Paul and not bring up those issues. This is central to the Ron Paul candidacy. Don't know why Ron Paul didn't just bring it up himself unless he was just waiting for them to finally ask a question about those subjects. I've been personally waiting finally for him to be on Bloomberg and other financial news networks so that he can talk about sound money, about the collapsing U.S. dollar, which, by the way, today went down to yet another new low, about the skyrocketing price of gold, about inflation, about the inflation tax, about the Federal Reserve, and he didn't get a single opportunity to speak on any of that. Instead, apparently this interviewer also got the same memo, because if you'll notice, the memo on Ron Paul has gone out to all the talking heads. They all asked the same questions. Cavuto, in his interview, asked many of the same questions. For example, will you support the Republican nominee? How many times does Ron Paul need to be asked that question over and over and over again? He handled it quite well. Of course, he's gotten quite a lot of practice at handling that question since they ask him over and over and over again. The military response question, well, that's new. That was added to the memo recently this week. The question about will you attack another country? What will be your military response to certain situations? And that's new to the memo. Let's try to back him into a corner on that one and prove that he's an isolationist. That's in the memo, apparently. And then there's the third party. Will you run as a third party? That's an old one, too. Again, like the will you support the Republican nominee question. That's old hat. It's been in the memo for well over a month now. So they should really kind of pull that one because it's a horse that's been beaten to death. Unless the intention is to waste a good portion of an interview with Ron Paul on things that he's already answered over and over and over again. Really disappointing. Not that Dr. Paul didn't, do very well. I think that he handled the question of, once you become president and you want to make all these changes, well, aren't you just going to run into a stone wall? Aren't you going to be limited on what you can do? That was what was implied by the question to him, and he handled that quite eloquently and elegantly. when he said that that the people will force the politicians, because if I'm elected, the people will force the politicians in Washington to move in that direction, since it'll be obvious that that's where they need to go if they want to keep their jobs. So a Ron Paul election of Ron Paul to the presidency will be a clear signal to Washington to shape up or ship out, literally. Again, amazing, no financial questions. So let's go ahead, and we're going to finally get a chance to listen to Ron Paul be asked some serious questions about the economy and about finance on a show that I listen to on occasion, the Financial Sense News Hour. And this is audio only, though there's some graphics laid on top, and we're going to go ahead and listen to Ron Paul on that show this weekend. Here it comes, coming up.
The presidential election in the United States. The presidential election in the United States is in full swing, with the exception of one of them. Joining me on the program is the Republican congressman from Texas, representing the 14th District, Congressman Ron Paul. Congressman, I want to begin our interview with a question. In a time when the U.S. economy is slowing down, businesses are cutting back, why do we never hear in the debate about government cutting back?
Well, the people running, excluding myself, have been born and bred with the idea that government's supposed to run everything, run the people, run the economy, and run the world. So that doesn't even cross their mind. And I think the media is about the same, so they never really ask the question. There are times when they'll talk about cutting back, but that's when they talk to a smaller crowd and trying to appeal to some of their instincts that, you know, there was a time when we were supposed to make government smaller and balance the budget. But most people that I'm talking to now that are sympathetic to what I'm doing, when they hear the candidates even pretend, they just don't come across as believable.
Well, you know, some of the candidates are talking about it's time for Americans to make sacrifices. And the one thing that strikes me, Congressman, is the government makes a mess of running things, and then they turn around to the citizens and ask them to pay for the cleanup. It just doesn't seem right.
Yeah, you know, that is endless, and it sort of reminds me about the way they think the property should be taken care of. They tell us we own the property, but if we use it, we have to ask permission and get all kinds of permits, and then we have to pay taxes on it, and then if they need it, they take it from us through eminent domain, and yet they tell us that we own our property, but we really don't. So there's a lot of pretending that's going on there, but I just think there's more and more people starting to see through some of this.
Now, another issue on the campaign trail this year is Social Security, and they're talking about fixing it. It seems like we're always fixing it. We had programs in 1984 with the Greenspan Commission to fix it. It was going to make it secure for, you know, a gazillion years. Here they are with some candidates talking about taking off the cap. Wouldn't it be better off if they just let the funds accumulate rather than spend them?
Yeah, that's been the fallacy of it all. Is the theory was that they would take a little bit, save it up, and then return it to the people in retirement. But they really spent it all. Even the fund that they claim is getting smaller really doesn't exist, because they're just holding a fiction that they're holding a computerized treasury bill, which is just another claim on the taxpayers. So there's really no real money there. And I think the most important thing is that we admit the truth about this. My plan isn't so much that we can all of a sudden have a lot more wealth, but I would like to change the whole system. I'd like to let young people get out of it and put the responsibility on them to do their own savings, and that they have to take care of themselves. At the same time, coming up with a plan where we don't have to quit making these payments to the elderly. And the only way we could do that is to change our foreign policy and save a lot of money elsewhere. If we don't, people say, well, that still sounds impossible and harsh, and how are you going to change foreign policy? But if we don't do something, what we'll have is a financial crisis. It's impossible and harsh, and how are you going to believe the money won't buy anything? And they've realized this already. They claim that cost of living last year was up just over 2%, so that's what they increased the benefits by. At the same time, the real cost of living for most Americans was 10% or more. Unless we do something and strengthen our dollar in the real sense of the word by living, there's no way we can help the elderly or anybody else that's become dependent on government.
You know, another issue coming up on the campaign trail is balancing the budget. And, of course, they're talking about raising taxes. Congressman, it seems as for the last three decades we've been talking about balancing the budget. And every time we talk about it, we're always talking about raising taxes, but the budget has never been balanced. Is this really making a lot of sense to go to Americans and say, you know, we just can't control spending in Washington, so in order to balance our books, we want you to pay more taxes, but as we know, as we increase taxes, we still don't balance the books.
Well, there's still a lot of people that argue that, and I guess deep down in their hearts, they believe it because they think it, they can get it maybe from 3 or 4 or 5% of the people. And the people who are voting for candidates like that might even believe, well, yeah, we better.
The presidential election in the United States is in full swing, with every candidate out there promising everything from the moon, exception of one of them. Joining me on the program is the Republican congressman from Texas, representing the 14th District, Congressman Ron Paul. Congressman, I want to begin our interview with a question. In a time when the U.S. economy is slowing down, businesses are cutting back, why do we never hear in the debate about government? Debate about government.
But the plain truth is that if we don't recognize it's not the taxes as much as the spending, because if we spend money and then people's prices go up, that is a tax in itself. So the regressive tax is the inflation tax. Concentrate on cutting spending and never trying to solve the problem by increasing taxes, or somebody will have a more convenient way of raising taxes. Some will say, well, if we cut the tax rate, the government... Actually, some will say, well, if we cut the tax rate, the economy is going to boom and the government's going to get more money. Cut taxes enough. Or some will say, cut taxes enough. Or some will say, well, we need to get rid of this income tax, which I think is just opening up for a disaster, because we'd probably end up with an income tax and a sales tax. So taxes are very important, and we need to understand it, and we can't solve our problem with more taxes. But what we have to do is address the subject, which is more difficult, and that is the spending side of the equation.
Congressman, one thing that I've always seen when we have the Fed chairman on Capitol Hill and questions are given, you seem to be the only one that understands the inflation consequences of monetary policy. Are there any others like you in Congress that understand that? And if there aren't we in big trouble?
I think so, and there aren't very many. It's not so much that my fellow colleagues are enemies of sound money. They just really haven't thought that much about it. I mean, they think about staying in office, and if it requires spending here and there, yes, they're going to vote for it. They'll call themselves conservative, but they'll cut something, some other program that doesn't affect their district. You know, it's always one of those things they easily rationalize, but for really studying the issue, there's just not a whole lot of interest in it. And some who have studied it have a misunderstanding, and they do not accept the point that I make continuously, that inflation is really a monetary issue and doesn't have to do with business people making profits or unions demanding higher wages. Those are consequences, but that's not the cause of the inflation. The inflation and the bubbles all come from Federal Reserve monetary policy.
And then a final question, Congressman, that I think is deeply disturbing, and we've seen this progressively over the decades, is more regulation coming in from government, and they seem to be moving in a direction of stripping away or doing away with the Bill of Rights, whether it's control, having control over the property that you own, free speech. I mean, you just go right down all the elements of the Bill of Rights, and it seems like we're doing an end run around it.
You know, it's endless, and the Republicans didn't do a very good job in economic terms after the Enron scandal. They decided it came because we didn't have enough regulation, so the Republicans led the charge on Sarbanes-Oxley. And then when it came to 9/11, they said, well, there must not be enough regulation on the American people, and that's why that happened. Instead of looking toward monetary policy and looking toward border security and a few other things, they said that what we need to do is make sure the American people aren't secure. And there had already been a major attack for 30 years on financial privacy, but that's been expanded. Now they talk about national ID cards and warrantless searches and sneak and peek searches in our homes and secret courts, the elimination of habeas corpus. There's so many things where you're exactly right. There's been a vicious, systematic attack on our civil liberties. And to me, civil liberties is the important point. And I think once you understand the true nature of civil liberties, it means the right to own property and the right to keep your wealth. The civil liberties, to me, means personal privacy and personal liberty as well as a market economy.
And one final question I think that is a major concern as we look at oil prices at $95 a barrel. We had a discussion here a couple of weeks ago on political candidates and on their policy on energy. Congressman, what is your policy on energy?
On energy, the first thing is I think when government gets involved and thinks they have the answer, you better watch out, because part of our current energy policy is that they think we have to protect oil resources. They're sort of mercantilistic in that we have to go out and protect our natural resources, and that's why we're in the Middle East. Even Alan Greenspan admitted that. And protect our natural resources, and that's why we're in the price. Then they say, well, the prices are going up, and there's going to be a shortage, so we need an energy policy. So then they collect billions of dollars of taxpayers' money, and then they start handing that out for R&D to their special friends to develop alternative energy. We need to just get out of the way. We need to get the government out of the way from developing nuclear energy. I think as prices go up, there will be alternative fuels, but prices have to determine what kind of alternatives we have. Today we subsidize things like ethanol from corn, and I think it's pretty clear that that's not the most economic way to solve our energy crisis.
Well, Congressman, if our listeners would like to follow your campaign or make contributions, I'm going to give out your website, if I may. It's ronpaul2008.com. And I just want to tell you, Congressman, I'd like to thank you for joining us on the program. And you definitely have my vote. And I would urge our listeners to give their vote to you as well.
Thank you very much for having me on.
You're welcome.
Okay, so there we have, looks like another endorsement by a financial expert, Mr. Jim Puplava, endorsing Congressman Ron Paul. Thanks to Mr. Puplava for giving Ron Paul the opportunity to actually speak about financial and economic matters. I'm going to push on now to a piece here. I'm going to do more of this tomorrow. Just going to put a little bit of it now, of Tucker Carlson speaking with Ron Paul supporters. Now, here's the story. Tucker Carlson actually followed the Ron Paul campaign around Nevada because apparently he was writing an article. Now, I don't know what for what publication, but apparently he was writing a print article about Ron Paul. And here he is interviewing or speaking with Ron Paul supporters in Nevada.
And I was like, oh, yeah. But I've heard of these things in various places,
okay.
Multiple places. It wasn't just one. It wasn't just there. And this one here, he went to the 25th largest. And he didn't want me to do that because, look, when you invest in other countries, be careful. He's like, be careful about what's underneath that. And I'm like, oh, interesting. So I was told that. And I was like, that's why he said that.
And you guys have all read this book?
Yes. And it's an interesting book just from the fact that
you're like, wow, and you see it multiple places.
Well, you don't just see it there. You know, who knows about
the credibility when you start hearing multiple places.
This book is popular with the liberal left, I would say the anti-war left, okay? And if the anti-war left finds out that Ron Paul wants to stop participating in the IMF and World Bank, they're going to vote for him.
You know,
because they know that's the real enemy.
If Democrats understood him, they would like him. If Republicans understood what true Republican conservatism is, they would also like him. He's cutting across many boundaries and differences, seemingly differences.
So what we got here is Ron Paul supporters speaking to...
I was going to give you something, Tucker, too, but I think it's important to look at.
Speaking to Tucker Carlson while he takes notes...
Last November, what was the biggest issue Americans voted on? The exit polling, remember?
Corruption.
Exit polling. What?
Corruption.
Corruption, yeah. No one remembers that. Well, look at this candidate here, right? What does he not fall off by special interest? Not doesn't take special interest money? That's the biggest politician votes what he says is consistent, right? Not bought off, not doesn't take special interest money.
He never
That's
goes
the biggest issue, I think, for.
So where does the corruption accumulate and concentrate? What did Eisenhower say in his last day as president? He gave a warning. Watch out for the
military industrial
complex. There's a movie you could watch that came out maybe 2-3 years ago, and that is based on his warning about watch out for the military industrial complex. So here we go again.
Okay, so we see Tucker Carlson very intently listening and nodding and once in a while chiming in, but mostly he's really listening and taking notes from Ron Paul supporters. And
we can take advantage of, we're going to Afghanistan, we're going into Iraq, and it doesn't matter.
The Marine Corps General.
We'll tell the public whatever we want because of the mass media. We'll just say it. Now, I've watched films at home that I bought from Amazon that showed me how the mass media pretty much said what the White House wanted them to say. How that happens, I don't know the mechanics. I don't know how or why, but we do know that the mass media is owned by a few corporations. So this energy of corruption has a web of power, and it's keeping the masses down and not letting the truth come out, the freedom come out. Well, you know in your heart because you're here.
I would say, Tucker, that's the question there is, because I'm skeptical like you. I think people are more than willing to succumb to authority. I've been very impressed by what I've seen in the Ron Paul movement. And I think the big thing about the Ron Paul movement is it's easier access to information. If you can hear the information and make your own choices, I'm seeing that a lot of people are making the choice for this message, whereas the masses maybe don't have access to the message.
What don't you agree with in the message?
It's a tough one.
You a pro-lifer?
Okay, so there we have Tucker Carlson in other parts of these clips, and they're long, like almost 10-minute clips, about four of them. So I didn't hit a particular part where he was doing much speaking. It was mostly him listening to Ron Paul supporters. And we have here is Ron Paul supporters wanting to sort of impress upon Tucker Carlson what their points of view are and why they support Ron Paul. And that's all well and good. I think if you find yourself in a similar situation, I think it's also good to kind of draw someone like Tucker Carlson out and into the conversation rather than just speaking at him through the whole thing. So just in my opinion, that's how I would have involved him a little bit more. But he was listening. Now, this is important. Tucker Carlson paints himself as a libertarian. He also has lately been painting himself as a supporter of Congressman Ron Paul. Or at least someone who's open-minded and favorably impressed with Congressman Paul. Of course, he's a media personality. He can't exactly endorse a particular candidate. I don't believe in his position he can do that. But he portrays himself as the media libertarian. And I've commented recently about the rise of what we might call neo-libertarianism, as in neoconservatism, as in neoliberalism. Well, now apparently we have neo-libertarians who would apparently be Glenn Beck, for one, who's another one who's suddenly painting himself as a libertarian, although somehow opposed to Ron Paul. And now we have Tucker Carlson. another neo-libertarian. And why should I say neo-libertarian? Because let's really have a look at what he's actually done recently. Today, breaking just an hour or so before I went to air, Ron Paul, endorsed by Nevada brothel owner. Brothel is a house of prostitution. Reno, Nevada, this is Associated Press. That means this was put out from the central data bank of the media, Associated Press, UPI, okay? And distributed to all the news media. Ron Paul, endorsed by Nevada brothel owner. Reno, Nevada, AP. Republican presidential candidate Ron Paul, an underdog Texas congressman with a libertarian streak, has picked up an endorsement from a Nevada brothel owner, Dennis Hoff, owner of the Moonlight Bunny Ranch near Carson City, said he was so impressed after hearing Paul at a campaign stop in Reno last week that he decided to raise money for him. Quote, "I'll get all the working girls together and we can raise him some money," close quote. Hoff told the Reno Gazette Journal, quote, "I'll put a collection box outside the door. They can drop in $1, $5 contributions," close quote. Hoff and two of his prostitutes, Brooke Taylor, yeah, like that's her real name, and a woman who goes by Air Force Amy, attended a Paul news conference. The women said they liked Paul's message but wanted to learn more about the other candidates before making a decision. Paul spokesman Jeff Greenspan said Paul is a diehard supporter of states' rights and an ardent libertarian who wants to return the purview of the federal government to what is articulated in the Constitution, the U.S. Constitution. Paul is also a devout Christian who opposes abortion. Quote, "On a personal basis, he doesn't condone those things," close quote, Greenspan said of prostitution. Quote, "At the same time, from his campaign perspective, it is not the role of the federal government, and it's not in the Constitution for federal government to regulate these things. The Nevada voters and legislature have decided it is legal activity in this state," close quote, he added. In 1971, the Mustang Ranch near Reno became the state's first legal brothel and led to a movement that legalized prostitution in 12 of Nevada's 17 counties. Hoff was accompanied to the Paul news conference by, here we go, Hoff was accompanied to the Paul news conference by television news personality Tucker Carlson, who is traveling with Paul for a magazine article he is writing. Quote, "Dennis Hoff is a good friend of mine, so when we got to Nevada, I decided to call him up and see if he wanted to come check this guy out," close quote, said Carlson, who hosts the show Tucker on MSNBC. So, interesting that it was all engineered by our supposed friend Tucker Carlson. Now, we have a little piece of research from another source here. Hope I didn't lose that page. Which goes into this in a little bit more detail about how Tucker Carlson basically engineered this appearance of the... this brothel owner at a Ron Paul campaign stop. Now, Ron Paul did not pick up this endorsement. He didn't ask for it. This was engineered and arranged by Tucker Carlson. It was a surprise attack on the Ron Paul campaign at one of their stops. This was not invited. This was something that Tucker Carlson arranged for with his quote-unquote friend, the brothel owner. There's more information on that here, but we are sort of closing the show now and running out of time, so I'm going to leave it at that. But suffice it to say, I think that we have to really question whether Tucker Carlson is a friend to Ron Paul when he pulls a stunt, a media stunt like this that gives us headlines about Ron Paul being, quote-unquote, endorsed by a brothel owner. Going to leave you with a video of a great song by Jimmy Vaughn, No Shackles on Me, and talk to you tomorrow. Now, the show is changing. I am extremely busy with grassroots Ron Paul campaign support activities both here in Southern California and on a national level. I am launching now a new program called the Message of Freedom Program, where we will be calling literally millions of Americans with an automated program to send them a message of freedom. This is a major Ron Paul support activity, and I'm going to be an intimate part of that. Also, I'm working on putting together a Ron Paul canvassing kit. It's an out-of-the-box, complete canvassing kit that you can purchase on the Internet, arrive at your door, open the box, throw it over your shoulder, head out the door, and go door-to-door for Ron Paul. Everything you need, beautifully logo-branded. That is another project I'm working on. I'm working on grassroots Ron Paul activity here in Southern California. So when it all comes down to it, there just aren't enough hours in the day, and I need to pay more attention to actual campaign support. So I will have to cut back my show. We'll be cutting back to 2 days a week, Tuesdays and Fridays, at the same time. So I hope you understand. I just don't have the time, and I'm really close to burning out unless I cut back. And I don't think we all want to see me burn out before I hit the finish line. So cutting back to 2 days a week, Tuesdays and Fridays from now on. And I hope to bring you better, tighter shows as a result. So I'm going to go ahead and close and leave you with this great piece of music of Jimmy Vaughn performing live, No Shackles on Me. And since tomorrow is Tuesday, I'll see you then. Thanks very much for tuning in. Stephen Vincent, The Freedom Message.
Chip in my wife. I don't want a chip in my baby. Stay out of our lives. Don't want no shackles. Don't want no shackles on me. I sit down with Big Brother. Shame on that Big Brother trying to track and trace me and all you would tag the animals and all you would tag the animals and tag everything on earth.